We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Wake that ass up
in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
The brother Kirk Franklin. Welcome, brother. Welcome back.
Good morning, King.
Now, why am I taller than you?
That's impossible.
That's never happened.
God. God does some amazing things in life, works for miracles, but that ain't never happened, Kirk.
I'm talking about the chair. King.
Oh. Yeah.
He's so sensitive, but you are taller than him.
Just for the moment.
No. He and I are the same height.
That's a damn lie.
That's not true either.
Stand up.
Come on, brother. Now I ain't even got no shoes on. Come on now, towering over you.
Charlamagne, no, you're not towering.
I'm towering.
Charlamagne got you by like an inch. Charlamagne got you by an inch, like by an inch. He ain't towering.
I'm winning this contest with anyone.
How you feeling, my brother?
Man, a lot of feelings.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
A lot of feelings. And, you know, I thank y'all for letting me come. I mean, this is my first week of having conversations, you know, about all of this. And so, you know, just trying to learn how to be able to articulate it in ways that I've never had to have this level of communication about. You know, I'm very open and transparent guy, you know, but some of this recent stuff has kind of, you know, hit me for a loop because it's so fresh. It's so new. It's only like, you know, 12 weeks old.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to learn how to do it in these ways. So, yeah, but I'm willing to try.
People that don't know, I'm talking about the documentary
Father Day.
The tab that you met your father for the first time in 53 years.
Yeah, well, and just the nuances of it, the fact that I hated a man for 53 years that I thought was my father.
Mm.
And he died knowing that I hated him.
That was powerful in the doc, because you said you went to go make peace with him.
Yeah.
I was wondering, like, how did you feel knowing you made peace with a person that, you know, you really had no problem with.
Yeah.
You really had no business having a problem with.
Well, I still would have had the brokenness in it because he wasn't in my life. Mm-hmm. And I hated him because he wasn't in my life and showed up when my career started to take off. And and that broke me, you know, being adopted and not having a mother and father in my life, but still knowing. Well, I met him when I was six, saw him again when I was 13, and then he started showing up when my career took off. Mm-hmm. And so for somebody that already had a lot of trauma, being adopted and having a lot of abandonment issues and acceptance issues, you know, it was a very painful process to live that way, knowing that you wouldn't want it. Damn. And just all the mistakes that a young black man can make, not having the type of mentorship, because I didn't have uncles that stepped in. I didn't mm-hmm. have those type of things. And even in the church, you know, the church majority, it's always made up of women, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately. And so you try to navigate and you make a lot of mistakes. And then religion and dogma can also become a little duplicitous mm-hmm. and can make the journey even more problematic, is because you're living in fear, mm. you know, because a lot of times in religion, it's God's going to get you, and God's going to get you, and God's going to get you more than it's God loves you. Mm. And even one of my mentors, now that I'm older, told me about 20 years ago, it's hard to know God's love as a father when you've never had one.
Mm. Damn.
Ooh. Fire, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
What made you want to meet him?
This guy? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just how it happened. You know, I was in the middle of just
working. You were looking for him.
I wasn't even looking for him. Mm-hmm.
Now you said this guy. Is that how you refer to him, is this guy?
Well, you know, and I know that language is necessary, right?
Absolutely.
And it's very important. And language speaks really the tenets of the heart, right? But you know, for me, this term father is something that I'm still just grappling with, and it's not his fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been a man who's lived his life. He's a 69-year-old man that has lived his life not thinking about that he has a son that was 10 minutes away from him his entire life, 10 minutes away. And so right now I call him Mr. Rick. So I call him Mr. Rick right now as I'm trying to navigate, because you know, he has a daughter and you know, and she's an incredible young lady. She's trying to navigate because she's been the apple of his eye all of her life. And you know, and it's like all of a sudden now they've got me. and he's been very loving, very welcoming. But at the same time, my biological mother, who I haven't ever really had a strong relationship with, is still denying that he's my father after two DNA tests.
Why is that? I mean, I didn't understand that in the documentary. Like, the DNA test was 99.99% positive.
Yeah.
That was, I'm not gonna lie, you're a funny person. You don't be meaning to be funny.
I know.
When they gave you the number, you was like, 99.9% what?
Yeah. It's because I haven't been in that position before in my life. You know, it's like I don't get a lot of calls and I got kids by different people. So, so I don't know. Yeah, and then, you know, you have a lot of anxiety because you don't really understand. But
why won't she accept it?
I don't know. And I would have loved for her to give me that. But it's obvious that she can't. And so I have the responsibility of still honoring black women mm-hmm. and talking in a way that still gives a light that I never want to attack her publicly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know her as my mother. You know, the woman that adopted me was the woman that I knew as my mother. Mm-hmm. I would see my biological mother maybe once or twice a year mm-hmm. in my life, which makes even the trauma even more painful, because in marginalized communities, when it comes to legal adoption, sometimes it doesn't always work the same. A lot of times people outside of our race and hue, they are adopted in systems where they don't really know their biological parents. And so they may know that they were given up, but at least they find people that want them and love them. So at least it's a wound that heals. Mm-hmm. But when you have people that come in and out of your life every now and then, because sometimes in our communities, you know, you can be related to somebody that lives right down the street and you don't even know it. Right. And I think that that's what has made the story even a little bit more painful and even more broad, is that the amount of people that have come out that look like us, that have this story. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is daunting, to know that the black American experience has caused this fractured understanding of what family is, because we were so displaced and separated and so many nuances to why we don't know who we are.
Now let me ask you, you did say that, what's his name, Mr. Rich? I don't want to call him
Mr. Rick. Mr. Rick.
Mr. Rick. So you said Mr. Rick has a daughter, and that's the apple of his eye.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel when you look at Mr. Rick and you see how much he loves his daughter and raised his daughter and put the time and energy into his daughter? And then you might look and reflect back on yourself and say, damn, why wasn't I the same way? Why wasn't I the apple of his eye? Why wasn't I his son? Why wasn't I, like, why? Did you ever look at that and get a little jealous and make you feel a way? And how did you overcome that?
Because I've never been the apple of anyone's eye. It was just my normal. Mm. I've never been the apple of anyone's eye. Even the woman that adopted me because of her age, you know, is one thing that I do share with my brother Charlemagne is that I am a huge advocate of therapy and counseling. I've been in counseling since I was 18 years old. Mm. I even the therapist I have right now, I'm his longest patient that he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. You know, and we kind of make jokes about it because he says that every new experience in my life, it triggers a new trauma. And so I believe in Jesus, I believe in prayer, and I believe in therapy. And so I've needed all of that just to try to get by. So her being the apple of his eye didn't affect me in any way because that's all I've ever known, not being that. And so that's my normal. That's been my normal.
You said something to Doc that hit me so hard, man. You said you don't even know who you truly are. I'm paraphrasing. You don't even know who you truly are because you only know the broken version of yourself.
Yes, sir.
God.
Yes, sir. And I don't want to, you know, even posture myself as a victim. I really try to want to maneuver. And what was very interesting because I was working on this album, and this album was just going to be an album I was working on. Bros, and for the first time, I had a little budget where I could hire a videographer. This is my guy over here to you, to your right and left, and Chris, and Chris was just with me, just capturing the process of working on my album. And in the middle of this album, a young lady that sings with me at her father's church, there was a funeral, and at that funeral, it was a funeral for a woman that is my biological aunt. I didn't go because I knew my mother would be there. I hadn't seen my mother in over 23 years because there was something that she did to me and my biological, well, and my half-sister that I thought was very painful. My half-sister just got out of prison and nobody was there to help her but me. I was 31 years old, 32 years old, and I didn't have, you know, the knowledge to know how to handle somebody getting out of prison and what to do because she still was dealing with drugs and different things. And so, something painful happened over 23 years ago that made me go, I'm not going to deal with you again. And so I didn't go to the funeral, but at the funeral, there was a man there that was friends of the family of the church that the funeral was at. Name was Rick. He saw Deborah at the funeral and said, oh, I didn't know that Deborah and this young lady that passed were related. I used to mess around with Deborah. And that was the beginning. And so my man was with me. I'm in the studio working on music. And so I was able to hide behind the camera, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. The camera gave me courage when Mr. Rick heard the rumors. It gave me the courage to, after I got the test results, to go see him, go see her, go see other people, so I wouldn't have to do it by myself.
I wonder, is Kirk Franklin, is there a version in your mind of yourself that you can see that's whole and healed? Because you say what you know, your therapist said to you how every new trauma,
every new experience
causes trauma, and it feels like that even now. Like, you know who your biological father is, but does that make you feel more whole, or does it make you just feel even more broken?
Beautiful question. And it's funny because when you hear this new, and you guys know how it is, man. You know it because you've written books. You are creative. You know how art imitates life. Mm-hmm. And so when you're in the middle of hell, the middle of something, it's going to come out in whatever it is that you were, you know, you're writing or you're doing music. And so even in the new record that comes out Friday, man, it's just, I am trying to figure that out. I'm trying to figure it out lyrically, is because I almost found myself afraid of knowing what even well looks like is because brokenness becomes almost like a blanket. And that's warped. That's not healthy. And so that's why I know I've got to continue to keep doing the work, is because I know that it affects everything and everybody around me. You know, it affects your understanding of love, and so your wife feels it, your children feel it, you know, all the people around you feel it. And at the same time, bros, you see how God uses it in this mysterious way, because there are so many broken people, you're able to communicate to them from a space that you can say to them, me too. And I think that sometimes, even in the kind of music that I do, it can make you feel like, okay, well, gospel music can be so happy and so up. It's like, you know, it ain't really speaking to my, you know, ish, right? But the music that I've been able to do, because I heal as I reveal, I really try to communicate my fragility in the music so that people can be able to see, okay, he don't have it all together, because I don't. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot about life, a lot about God, a lot about struggles that I don't understand, and I'm still trying to figure it out. And so I'm trying to do my best to just walk it out. And
aren't you just trauma bonding with your listeners then?
Wow, that's a strong question. That's a very strong question. I pray that I give them balance, as I pray that in the lyrical content, in the music, that as I go through the journey, you know, even like song like Imagine Me, you know, imagine me loving what I see. And then at the end of the song, even though I talk about the beginning of that, I talk about how it's gone, you know. So, and I think that that's important. I think that David, the psalmist David, right? I'm quite sure that you've read, you know, Psalms before. You know, it sounds a little bipolar, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, one day he's afraid questioning. Right. One day he's down, and one day he's rejoicing. And I think that that duality is necessary. It's because the complexity of life requires an honest approach of how rain and sunshine, they coexist in our journey.
But I think it also allows people to know that they're not alone with their journey.
That's what I've always tried to do, you know. But what Charlamagne just said is something that I definitely want to ponder on, is because I think it's such a strong statement. And I think that it's very important that as you try to give medicine and try to wrap it in candy, that you are at least trying to give the solution. And so I appreciate you saying that to me, so that I can, you know, fight to still try to be accountable, because I'm still learning.
I think that's the biggest thing. Like, you know, we're all just still learning, right? Like, we're not experts. Mm-hmm. We're just sharing our experiences.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're doing. You're just sharing your experience.
Yeah.
One thing I love in the doc too, man, I love seeing folks doing inner child work. And that's what you're doing. You're doing your inner child work. You're trying to heal your inner child. How important is that to you?
Man. Gotta keep it together, bro.
You good, brother? We here for you.
Keep it together. Once again, it's my first week, you know, doing it. It's amazing, because I hadn't been around my mother in decades, and the fact that she won't give me what I'm asking—it's like, just let me know that you didn't know, and you know, even say you don't know, but to be so adamant about he isn't your father, it's powerful, because her not giving me that takes away my ability to be able to even try to embrace it, because she still has power over the little boy, right? And I hadn't seen her in decades. Like, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing that you can see the cause of the beginning of your reckless life, and hadn't seen them in almost 3 decades, and they still have power over the soul of the little baby.
You know, I could never imagine myself in that predicament or position, but I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, right? And here's a lady that you call your biological mom, and you haven't seen her in 3 decades.
Well, 23 years.
23 years, almost 3 decades. 23 years. And I guess the question I would want to know is why, right? And the reason I say why is, in this situation, it's like, you know, you have kids, I have kids, Charlamagne has kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think I would feel like, damn, you don't want me. And even though that, you know, I was adopted, and it's like, you would feel like, well, I'm successful now. I'm Kirk Franklin, and you still don't want nothing to do with me. You still don't want to be to make up for lost time and to try that. That never affected you anyway.
Why you got the quiet storm voice on?
Because it's just how I feel. I'm about to start crying because I feel him. Because I feel him.
You're amazing.
That don't feel weird to you, Kirk?
Well, first of all, thank you for the comedy break, and I appreciate. Thank you for the comedy break.
Like, why are they talking
to Kirk? Because I feel him. Because I'm about to start tearing. Because I feel away.
Okay.
Wow. You're something else.
Don't even
And I love how y'all got that brotherhood fire like that. You know, and it's funny because
I really don't like him. But,
but even that is beautiful to me because I was raised with none of that. You know, being raised by yourself, that's traumatic. Mm-hmm. I was the kid, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I was the kid on the last day of school. I would cry because I was going back to a house with an older lady who it was just empty.
Damn.
And I didn't want to leave these kids because I had no family to go home to. Oh, man.
See, and before, this is why therapy and stuff is so important. Because before the conversation started, before you even turned on the mics, you were telling Envy to keep having kids because you don't want to have an empty nest. And you were like, an empty nest is a motherfucker. You didn't curse, but you might have cursed.
No, he didn't curse. He didn't curse.
Not this time.
But you said, and so now that's the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah. And so you fill your life with no. Mm. You fill your life with noise. And so, and then when you talk about, well, I'm Kirk Franklin now, you still don't want me. I'm going to tell you, whatever that Kirk Franklin thing is, a lot of times makes it worse. It's because success can be traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that in therapy. It's because now you got to deal with, well, how do I maneuver? How do I, like, I was so traumatized by successes that when the first album goes platinum, you think a million people like you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the next album goes gold, your warp behind thinks that half a million people don't like you no more.
Wow.
And so I'm honest enough to say it. I'm quite sure I'm not the only one that goes through that. And so when those beginning stages of life, when you don't have people to inform you of who you are, it sets the trajectory of how you process everything in life. Everything in life is through that same filter. Mm. I want to be liked. I want to be accepted. Mm. Am I okay? Am I good enough? And you can be 53 years old, still asking, how'd I do? How'd I do? Mm. How'd I do? I'm doing interviews all week, and I'm, you know, and I'll still pull the publicist to the side. Okay, how was that? Was that good? You know, was that, you know? And it's because you're just still trying to figure out. And so all of this just opens up the new wounds. And so that's why I needed this album. I needed this music. I needed to. Man, can you imagine if all this was going on and I was just at the crib having nothing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I needed to be working on music. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely,
100%. Bro, I couldn't be still. I had to be doing something because I was going to go crazy.
But isn't that a response to trauma, though? Staying busy? They always say staying busy is a trauma response.
It can be. It can be. And I don't know if all of it is terrible. It's because there are other resolves that you could take that could even be more detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drugs, drinking, suicide, you know. I think that the most important thing that I do want anyone listening to understand is because, again, it's not just Kirk's story. This is a lot of people's story, and a lot of people live in these spaces, which is mind-blowing. All of the responses I've gotten from this is that I just want people to know that you can't wait to get fixed.
That's right.
Before you get up and win. So what you got to do is you got to win wounded.
Oof.
Did this help your relationship with your kids?
That's a paw. You got to win wounded. That's all of us, right?
You got to win wounded. You can't wait for them sorry. You can't wait till the person wants to fix it. You can't wait for the apology. And what they did was wrong. What God allows at times feels so wrong. But we got to be able to trust his heart when we don't understand his hand.
Mm.
And so you got to win. I need you. Where my camera? Is that my camera? Where's it at? Queens and kings, no matter what has been brought in your life by the winds and waves of life, I need for you to get up. I need for you to limp across the finish line. Limp, limp, bleeding, cussing, crying. But I need for you to win wounded.
Mm. Now, has that strengthened the relationship with your kids? Has it changed anything with your kids?
You know, it's been very interesting, man, because, you know, my kids have loved me through all of my deficiencies. My youngest, who is brilliant, he's he's a thinker, and he said to me that he said that this has given him another level of grace for me. He said, because you have done the best you knew how to do. He said, man, he said, because I don't know not having a life without y'all. He says, man, you know, and again, I don't want him to see his daddy as a victim, you know, but the kindness that they've shown me has really been humbling, you know, the patience, because can you imagine being married to this, you know, somebody that doesn't fully understand what love is. I've always, because once again, just because you're introduced to love don't mean you know how to receive it, you know, if it hasn't been engrafted in you. And so my family, they've been very kind, because I know that I've been a lot.
Your son is at the end of the dock, right?
Yeah, firstborn. Yeah, that's my firstborn. I was just talking about my youngest.
Got you.
Yeah.
And but you let my first. Hear, when you found, well, when you let Mr. Rick know he was the father.
Yeah.
Why was that important to do?
Well, first of all, it was a great opportunity to have a reconnection with him. I thought that it would be a moment of healing, mm-hmm. that could open up an opportunity for us to heal. And so I was very grateful that it was something that he was moved by, and to have this reconnection point with him.
He had a visceral reaction, though, just like Mr. Rick had a visceral reaction, like immediately, like mm-hmm. just tears. Mm-hmm.
My son is a beautiful soul, man. Mm-hmm. He that's my firstborn. That's my firstborn. It's my first namesake, and you know, Carrion has been the homie since since he was six. He had the passport. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, my son and my kids have traveled the world with me, and to be able to see him again and to hold him close to me, and to just touch his face like I hadn't been that close to him in over a decade, and to just embrace him, you know, man, because I've missed my son. I've missed my son, and I love my son because my son grew me up. You know, the church killed me when I got a kid pregnant back in, when I got his mom pregnant back in 88, mm-hmm. in the 80s, and I was a church musician. Mm-hmm. Man, the ridicule, but that was my home. That was the homie, man. I took him to all the choir rehearsals, and you know what I'm saying, when I was working on music, mm-hmm. and you know, and so to be able to hold my firstborn again and to embrace him, it was a very loving moment for me.
How important is it to hear I apologize from your parents?
Oh man. Because I would love to hear now, you know? And so to be able to hear that, it's very healing, I would believe. Mm-hmm. It's because it would heal me, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was very important that he heard that from me. It was very important for him to be able to know, man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for stuff I may not even know I'm sorry about. I just need for you to know it. I need for you to be able to hear I'm sorry, because I know the healing that mm-hmm. exists in those words. And I just want him to know for the things I knew, for the things I didn't know, for the things I'm trying to figure out, for the things, for whatever you need to put this in, the bucket that starts you on your journey. As another black man, I need for you to hear your daddy say, I'm sorry. And you can apply wherever you need it. I don't care. I don't care. This ain't about winning. All I want to win is you.
That's right.
All I want to win is you. Mm.
There was another part of the doc, man, where you couldn't call your aunt, aunt. You called her by her first name, and she wouldn't reply to you until you said aunt. Why was that so hard? Call her aunt.
Well, these are people that I wasn't raised around my entire life. You know, I didn't have that family dynamic, so I don't have the habit of calling people uncle and aunt. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not that was not part of my construct, and so it's not natural for me to do it. So I didn't mean any offense. It's just these are not people that have been in my ecosystem my entire life, and mm-hmm. so that's why, you know. And I do want to make it inextricably clear that I'm not here to bash my mother. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to bash my aunt, because these are black women. And it is very important for me to make sure that I still, as a black man, carry the role of covering the most powerful, the most precious treasure that we have to this earth, and that's the black woman. So I'm not here to do that, and I refuse to do it.
All right, wow. Well, I think it's only right that we get into the single off this
album.
Oh,
I got one. I do got one final question.
What's that?
Very important. Being that you've gone through all of this, when are you going to let Plies get his DNA test?
Yo, shut up, man. Let's get into a single.
You know,
right now.
That is the real reason why I'm here. Mm. Where's my camera?
This one right there.
Plies, I love you. Come home. Mm.
Oh my goodness. Let's get into a single off the album. The album Father's Day is out this week. What you want to play? These guys are crazy. Just have a nice sentimental interview and you got to end with this. No. This guy's crazy. This guy.
Kurt whispered in my ear, you so dumb.
I rocked with you.
The sentimental interview. We all about the tear and he ends with that. What do you want to hear off the album? Can we get to a joint off the album?
New album comes out, man. I'm so excited about the new tour. I'm on tour right now, man.
That's right.
I'm on tour right now with Ty Tribbett, the Clark Sisters, King. And they're killing it. They killing it every night, bro. The Clark Sisters, Tamela Mann, Take Me to the King, David Mann, singers, the whole band. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we are at the Prudential Center coming up in a couple of weeks, and the new album called Father's Day, it comes out this Friday, and I needed this album, and I hope that it can help heal people like it helped heal me.
I'm happy for
you. Or that it's trying to heal me. I'm still not there, but I'm excited. What do you want? Hit him. You know what?
Needs? You
want
to do needs?
Let's do needs.
Let's do needs. Ladies
let's
do and gentlemen, needs. We appreciate you for joining us. We love you. We appreciate
love you, brother.
You.
Grateful.
And ladies and gentlemen, it's Kirk Franklin. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.